Hello, everybody. Welcome once again to another episode of Deep Dive with Steve Chow.
That's right. Great to be here. We're going to dive right into the deep. And what are we sinking our teeth into today?
Well, we are sinking our teeth into something that you are familiar with because you've covered stories about car sharing in Singapore.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so what was your experience like? I mean, what was the one thing that really stood out? Because you have your own car, but when you were doing that experiment, was it for a week?
I think it was about a week, basically trying to find out what it was like if you did not have a car and you wanted to use these services. And actually, I found it was a really great option to have available. So, you know, sometimes you need a car for whatever reasons to buy bulky items and all that. So it was nice to have it there. Of course, it was just the hassle of sometimes getting it when you want it and in the right location, because obviously there are only a few cars and shared by many of us.
Sure. And we are revisiting this topic because very recently we got news that BlueSG, they've suspended its operations, and they said that they will launch a new service though, but that's going to happen next year in 2026. And the reason the current infrastructure needs an upgrade, basically. Its CEO, Keith Key, has actually made that comment. So now, BlueSG, though, I mean, they were the only car sharing platform that offered point-to-point services Singapore.
Meaning you can rent it here and return it there.
Yeah, anywhere.
Whereas for other car services, you rent it here, you got to return it here.
Yeah, so that one we refer to like point A to A, back to A.
That's right.
So, so in other words, we are here really to basically talk about whether car sharing companies now will jump in to fill that gap.
That's right. So we're going to dive into that and talk about the state of car sharing. We did reach out to BlueSG and invited them to come and join us on the podcast, but they said their spokesperson is focused on the company's transition plan. So in BlueSG's absence, we have To Ting Feng, Chief Executive and Co-Founder of GetGo.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me here.
Research Assistant Professor Samuel Cheng from the Singapore University of Technology and Design.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
Okay, welcome, boys. Guys, you look so young. I have to say, you guys are boys. So, okay, what was your first reaction when you got the news? I mean, earlier before this, right, Ting Feng, you said you actually know the CEO. Yeah. So, was it still a surprise to you when you heard the news?
Yeah, I think it was definitely a surprise. I think they announced it maybe on the 4th of August, and I think the last day of operations was the 8th. So when we heard it, I think we were surprised in a way at how sudden it was. I think my first reaction was to, you know, just drop down the text and, you know, just check in and see how things are.
Not trying to collect their data and like, can we get some of your subscribers?
I mean, as you know, as fellow operators, you know, we know how challenging, you know, providing such a service is. I think that's the first thing that we did. And of course, the other thing was really thinking about how we can then, you know, help to fill in, you know, the temporary gap, you know, and serve, you know, BlueSG users that, you know, now will no longer have the benefit of their services.
How significant is it, the fact that they are doing point A to B, yours is A to A, you know, is it a very different market, or do you find that this is you're sort of supporting the same group of users?
I think that's a great question. I think for us, the overlap is meaningful, but it's not a 100% overlap. Right, as we understand, a point A to B service actually competes a little bit more directly with ride hailing and taxis. Right, whereas for us, we do a round trip A to A service, so we actually serve users that have a longer use case or a more round trip use case as well. But of course, we're both car sharing companies, and many of our users do overlap.
So, yeah, Samuel, when you first heard the news, I mean, there's even some chatter on the ground whether BlueSG is going to return in 2026. Your thoughts on that?
I think it came as a surprise to quite a number of people, especially those who have been using car sharing services, right? Because suddenly, of course, you had GetGo, which offers a very different model, point A to A. And then BlueSG served a different market where you could drive together with three friends, four people could go down, drive for supper, for instance, right? And, you know, get the vehicle instead of taking, let's say, a taxi or even a ride hailing. Right, so it offered a different kind of autonomy, right? So when BlueSG shuttered, I think that gave people some surprise, and I saw within my community then there were chatters. I was like, okay, how do I get on with my kind of activities if I don't have this option, right? Do I go back to taxis? Okay. Or are there viable alternatives?
Yeah. But in terms of your understanding of what was happening in the industry, when you heard about BlueSG doing this, was it a surprise to you? And in your brain, did you start thinking, what's going on?
I think it's quite interesting because if you look maybe 10, 10 years ago, right, car sharing was not really big in Singapore. There were always car sharing, car rental companies in Singapore, but we didn't have this proliferation of it. And then with BlueSG, with its electric vehicles, and then with its charging stations coming up in all the different car parks and offering the A to B service. And then in the last few years, with GetGo in the market, really giving people a taste of what car sharing could be, of course, enabled with, you know, an easy to use app for you to see the availability, competitive pricing, that really changed the behavior of people. But that also raised the question, right? Where does car sharing stand within kind of the whole mobility options that we have in Singapore?
Yeah, because running this business, I mean, Ting Feng, clearly, I'm sure there are obstacles and there are challenges. To keep this business running, it's not easy. What are some of the biggest challenges?
I think at the end of the day is to provide something of value, right? And to provide the value in a way where it's efficient and economical, right? I think one of the decisions that we did when we started GetGo was to decide whether we want to provide an A to A service or an A to B service, right? Mm-hmm. I think we're very grateful that, you know, because of our research, looking at things around the world and really looking at the specific needs of Singapore, we chose to do an A to A model, right? And I think that has really helped us to be very focused around the kind of use cases and users and families that we serve. And, you know, like Samuel said, to really price it appropriately so that we can deliver something of value, but also be financially sustainable at the same time. I mean, our financials are public. I'm glad to share that we have turned it another year of profitability.
Congratulations. I was going to ask, what was your bottom line looking?
Yes, you know, it's that's right. Healthy. I think the financial profile of A to B companies for car sharing is also public. I think BlueSG's financials were also covered publicly recently. Mm-hmm. And I think there are certain structural complexities when you run the point A to B model as well.
Actually, you did say that. You guys did say that it has significant operational challenges.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? What are some of the challenges there?
Yeah, so for one, I mean, Steve, you know, the A to B model means that you have to book a car where you start, but you also have to book a destination where you end.
Correct.
Right. So from a network perspective, it means that for every car you have, you need dedicated parking that is in excess of the cars that you have.
Right.
So that's already one challenge. For us, we have 3,000 over cars. We have exactly 3,000 parking lots that we secure, we procure and we place the cars in. That's one. I think another challenge is that, you know, travel patterns are not symmetrical unless you force them to be. So if you own a car, you will always return home with your car, right? And so that is kind of a forcing function. And same for A to A service, where you pick up the car from home, you go around your day, have your dinner, watch a movie, you still need to bring the car back home. And that's fine because you're going to go back home and rest at the end of the
eventually,
day.
Eventually, that's right.
But for an A to B model, you're allowing people to travel one way.
Yeah.
And unlike ride-hailing and taxis, where the drivers will rebalance the cars themselves and go where demand is, there's no one to drive the car back. So then it becomes a complex optimization and pricing challenge to make sure that the cars are in the right place.
It's like those bicycles. You can rent it, you can cycle to wherever and then just park it at any spot, right?
But who brings...
Because if they have everybody lorries. Goes one direction, then there are like a whole bunch of bikes there, but no bikes at the other spot, right?
So I'm also wondering, right, is there any chance of sort of maybe working with the authorities? I mean, like LTA or, you know, a body like that can actually help, you know, manage some of the, fill some of the gaps here that you're facing.
Are you saying that if the government were to run these car sharing services,
Yeah, or have
example,
some kind of a shared, I don't know what sort of formula it would work out, but can they sort of step in and actually, where it's sort of like a win-win situation for the private
would
company?
Would that make it what we call a betterer?
So I think within the land transport master plan, you do see that we want to move towards a car-like society, right? Mm-hmm. But what does that mean in actual practice, right? Now, for reference, we have about 7.5 million trips daily on public transport. Mm-hmm. In contrast, then for car sharing, the daily trips is probably a fraction of public transport. So it's never going to replace kind of mass moving transportation modes, right? But what could be done?
Sorry, you're saying that it will, like, car sharing will not go mainstream. It will always be sort of like a niche.
Not not really a niche, but it's complementary to the wider transport system. So if you look at it, your public transport, your trains, your buses, LRTs, they will be the main people mover.
So someone's not going to give up taking the MRT and switch to a car because of that.
Car sharing offers a different opportunity, right? For instance, like if you need to bring your elderly parents to the hospital. Right.
But what if we said have more car sharing? So instead of having only a few thousand cars, we flood the market with a whole lot more cars, which means more people have access to it.
Yep.
Would that change the way we travel?
So in order for us to achieve that, you need to get them to complement one another. What I'm saying is, you know, public transport and your car sharing services, right? So it comes down to the planning. Where are you going to locate all these services? Do you have sufficient density? Now, for instance, when I open up my GetGo app, I have quite a few car parks around my place with multiple cars that, you know, fit different kind of trip types that I want, right? A small vehicle, a bigger vehicle, so on and so forth, right? So I do have that sort of option available. But can more people have that option? So that's probably where we could work together with the authorities to look at right-siting these facilities, right? And of course, if you look at some of the car parks, they're underutilized in a way. Not every car park is like 90, 100% full capacity. So there is space for that. And hopefully what it does chip away is convince people who have two cars to say, okay, maybe I don't need my second car. And for people who, you know, running out of their COE, then they could think, maybe.
Yeah, that sounds like me, because my car will, you know, will be done in like 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, what? How are you going to convince me to switch to car sharing? Because right now, I'm still a bit iffy. And because, you know, I have seen videos, actually, what Steve did was that, you know, if you somehow crash the car or there's an accident, my goodness, what you have to pay out of your own pocket is sizable.
I'm wondering, do you crash often?
I'm sure Teddy is a very safe driver.
My record is pretty good. But, you know, there's always that what if, right? And then it's like, oh my gosh, $11,000 you got to pay out of your own pocket. Yeah. So that's one of the things that's sort of keeping me, you know.
So that's an interesting point when, I mean, as a psychologist, I observe how people drive too, right? So I think the charging model of the different car sharing services are different. For instance, the Blue SG, you charge by
time.
Minute, right? The time.
Yeah.
So, of course, the incentive is there to drive.
To speed.
Maybe not speed, but drive faster. Optimize, right? Rather than GetGo where you hire by
pre-reserve,
the block, right?
A block,
So, in the sense, you know, how you design the service would create different sort of incentives or disincentives for people to use it. Yeah.
So, the question is, can we help people like Oteli, for example, switch? What do you think needs to be done in our infrastructure to support users who are in her predicament, who are wanting to actually use the service?
Maybe just to add on to Samuel's point real quick, actually, maybe not commonly known fact is only one in three households in Singapore own cars.
Okay.
So the vast majority of Singaporean households are non-car owners. Two-thirds, right? So when we look at the future of car sharing, we really see it as a complement to public transportation. And the share of the market that we are really trying to increase over time and take away from is that of individual car ownership, which is not as efficient, which contributes to the high COE prices as well. So we're really trying to make car access more accessible to people who don't need it every single day.
Right.
So the ideal profile of a car sharing user is someone that takes public transportation to work Mondays to Fridays. On the weekends, take the car out for 4 hours on a Sunday, take the car out for 3 hours on a Saturday, so that you don't have to own a car to enjoy the occasional benefits of having one.
Right.
So now with Blue SG, now they're on pause, right? Do you find that their subscribers are coming over to you and you're actually, that's why you have the healthy bottom line? Is that what's part of the reason?
Of course, in the short kind of 2 weeks since they shut down, I do see an increased use. So there is some overlap in, you know, our user base and the use case that they have as well. I'm sure ride-hailing services will also have captured some of that increase in share because it's point-to-point as well.
But if I can ask you, so how many cars do you have right now under GetGo?
We have 3,000, just slightly over 3,000.
Okay, you guys have been around for how many years?
A little bit over 4 years.
Okay, 3,000 cars. So 3,000, I mean, there are a few other car sharing services. Yep. They have fewer cars, you know. Yep. I'm just wondering, what is the optimum number that would sort of work for a country like Singapore so that it not just services the you know, average user, but also even like Oteli, if you want to get it on, there'll be a car for you when you want it, you see.
Or even a collaboration, like, you know, for your companies to sort of merge and you share that sort of a, whether it's a fleet data or like, you know, like,
you mean like
cross-fleet access.
Mm-hmm. Even in MediaCorp, we could have a car sharing facility right here in the office where
you
come a collaboration
right
with the company.
Away.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the sky's the limit. I think it really comes down to, you know, how we can create a quality service that people can use. I think, for example, now a lot of our cars are on level 3 and level 4 of HDB parking spaces. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because obviously the owners are prioritized first.
Right.
But over time, I think as we build this collective need and usage of shared car services, actually we can make the cars much more accessible. Another thing we have done is we have gone into condominiums as well. So previously, we couldn't put cars in condominiums. Okay. We have now, you know, penetrated a couple of the larger ones, and we're also providing that to condominium residents.
So in your opinion, there is room to grow.
There is
enough demand, right?
Yes.
So the state we're at is actually still at a fairly young or early stage.
I would think so.
Not to just use GetGo as an illustration, but there is a whole kind of fleet with different choices, right? You have your smaller hatchback sort of cars all the way to, you know, the vans.
Right, right.
Small vans, which fit different occasions for different numbers of people. And that offers the option and variety for consumers, I think, as opposed to, let's say, your Blue SG, which was, you only had two models. Right.
Do you feel that that was one of the reasons they sort of, I guess, did not benefit so much from this car sharing option?
So I think consumers also would like some variety because they, you know, sometimes you want to have a trip down to Sentosa or East Coast Park, and then you got to bring a bicycle, for instance, versus if you just want to do a grocery run, right? Mm-hmm. It will be a very different kind of vehicle that you need.
And Blue SG cars were all the same.
Yes,
in fact, everyone knew you were driving a Blue SG.
For instance, if you go to IKEA to buy your furniture, would you be able to fit into the car, right? That's something for you to think about. But I think having the option helps to expand this, but also, what it helps to kind of bring mainstream is the culture of saying, okay, if I want an option, if I want to have a car, I do not have to buy a car and maintain it. I do have access to this service. And that starts to help you to think very differently. And I think, of course, it's going to be painful, especially for car owners, right? to say, I'm going to give up the car because you can get a car at any time.
And some people grow attached to their cars as well.
It is not logical. I got to admit, this past week, I had my car locked up for another experiment. And thinking the train was great. It was so comfortable, but I still missed my car, you know, and I know I was saving money, but still. So it's an emotional response, you know what I mean?
These car sharing, you know, some of the cars out there, they're not in great condition. We have seen cat fur, you know, in the backseat.
That was the time I did the experiment. The first thing I do, the first 5 minutes, is just taking my wet wipes and wiping the steering wheel, and that was what I did every trip.
You know, so is that also another thing that is
that's a real challenge, right? I think a big part of our effort is really to educate and promote this sense of community. Right, when we take the bus and we take the MRT, we don't eat and leave our stuff all around, right?
You get fined though.
You get fined and people are watching you.
That's true.
Right. So as a joke, you know, we call it the public toilet issue, right? Where you're using a public property but in a personal and private manner.
You don't have cameras in your car.
We don't have cameras in our car. We respect our users' privacy. How do we promote, you know, use nudges, use incentives, use disincentives to promote a responsible culture? And I think most of our users, the vast majority of them, are responsible ones, right?
That's right.
So how do we continue to build that? Because this problem will come next time as well when we have autonomous vehicles. No one's going to watch you in the vehicle. So how do you really build this ecosystem where people take responsibility? We don't need to clean the car for us. Just maintain it after yourself.
So just coming back to Blue SG, so for them, is it also a question of not just the business model, but the technology? We understand there was something to do with software. They updated their software and word is that it wasn't operating very well. Did all those things compound and build up to what happened to them?
I mean, a little bit of history of BlueSG is that BlueSG originated as an effort by the government to bring in electric vehicles and car sharing. Mm. And actually, the current owners of BlueSG are not the original owners that built the business, right? Mm. So I think as a result of that transition in ownership, I think the current team had to, you know, really make the effort to rebuild and transition. Mm. And as a tech company ourselves, also doing car sharing, we know that that is not an easy task as well.
How significant is the tech in terms of your operations? And if something went wrong, how big a blow would that be?
Oh, it would be huge. I think tech is really the magic that makes this whole ecosystem work.
But it keeps changing. It keeps getting upgraded. I mean, to have to stay, you know, ahead of the game, that is also a challenge, isn't it?
So I think building and continuously improving our tech capabilities is a big part of what we do. So we have our in-house tech team. We're always releasing new features, not just on the user end, that means on the app, but also building features to help us maintain the cars, move the cars around, make sure that the cars are in good condition as well. Mm. So I think it is a big part of what makes car sharing possible. So without technology, I think it is impossible to do, you know, what we do and what BlueSG and our other peers do as well.
Actually, out of curiosity, at any one time, roughly how many cars do you have not on the road? Like in a shop or being fixed up or something?
I would say it's less than 10%.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's less than 10%.
Because it just means that any service, you always have to anticipate and expect that will be the case, right?
That's right. That's right.
Even with BlueSG.
But... So even with SIA, you know, some things are undergoing servicing and all that. Yeah.
So I guess just looking ahead, say come 2030, right? Who's going to win the game? Is it the operator with the biggest fleet, the best tech, the lowest price? Yeah, what's it going to take?
I think in my view, you're absolutely right to point out that it's the tech that has really helped this whole industry grow. Because if we really look back in like 10, 20 years ago, car sharing was there, right? Mm-hmm. Just in a very, in today's the more traditional form, where you take a card and you unlock a car and so on. Now you do everything on the phone.
That's right.
Right? You could even look at which car is available, where it's located, and so on and so forth. And if you need it, everything is integrated there. Technology is really the enabler. So I think going forward, it's about how you can continually offer a tech-first solution that works, right? Not just a solution that looks nice, but is quite cumbersome on the consumers, but... And also in Singapore's case, then looking at what is the changing transportation needs, right? And predicting ahead, you have smaller families, but you have people with higher disposable income, for instance, and people living in different places. Now that the master plans are all being released, you are seeing people staying in further areas. You have interesting places all over Singapore, right? People might want to go to all of these places. So how do you plan for all of this, right? To ensure that the density of the service. So probably the technology and the density of the service would be critical.
Because people want it to be like just effortless, like, you know, don't give me glitches and, you know, stuff. You want it to be quick, efficient, and easy to use.
Just to add quickly, it's not just only around the technology, but it's also around the cars. Ultimately, the cars...
Oh, I thought around the customers.
No. For the customers, the cars also have to be, you know, flexible. There must be a diversity of cars. The cars
and working.
Must be of good quality and clean. So I think part of that is also around how technology can enable that high quality and available fleet, and that's really a big part of what we try to do every single day as well, you know, to make that better.
I once saw this funny video. You press a button and they're like this, this plastic wraps the chair. So imagine that if you go in, you wrap it, then when you finish, you just throw away, and then you get the fresh
It's okay, that's something to think about. Yeah.
when the technology becomes cost efficient enough, I'm sure.
No, but I think I'm really open to car sharing. I mean, if anything, so like I say, I still have 2 years, but I think before that, I need to actually try.
Go give it.
Just give it a try. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, guys. That was really insightful. Thanks for sharing so very much.
Yeah, thanks for that. If you have thoughts, of course, do let us know. If you've if you are into car sharing and not into car sharing and you have thoughts about it, let us know. I mean, see if you can convince a telly to take it up. What would you say to her? Yeah, you're quite convinced.
I'm really quite convinced. Yeah, 80% there. So I just have to actually test it.
The first car she tries better be clean and nice. Otherwise, it's not that good. That's true.
The first experience really matters. Yeah.
So thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us. A shout out to our team as well. Tiffany Ang, Junaini Johari, Joanne Chan, Arjun Bala, Ho Peining, Nathaniel Fetovero, and Alison Jenner. Video by Radza Rahman. We'll see you guys next week. Bye for now.